Live Creative Now, episode 30.
Welcome to Live Creative Now with Melissa Dinwiddie, a weekly podcast to inspire you to create your art and share your work, because that's how you will change the world.
Hey, brilliant. This is Live Creative Now, the podcast for anyone with a creative hunger. Whether you think of yourself as not artistic, not creative, or you think of yourself as an artist of any kind, or anything in between, because no matter how you define yourself, feeding your creative hungers makes you feel more alive, and it is how you change the world. I am Melissa Dinwiddie, passion pluralite artist, happiness catalyst, and creativity instigator, here to address all your questions about living a full-color creative life. First, before we get to today's episode, I owe you an apology. Yesterday was the first day of a new course that I'm running called Creative Courage Lab, which is a month-long, tiny and daily experiment in making, sharing, and growing, designed to help you hurdle past fear and self-doubt and learn to put yourself out there like your heroes do. And I owe you an apology because if you're a podcast listener but not a subscriber to my Insider's newsletter, you never got a chance to sign up because you probably never heard about Creative Courage Lab. I referenced it very obliquely last week, but I never came out with a podcast episode that directly told you about it. So I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. But it's a very good reminder that the best way to make sure that you're in the loop on whatever I've got coming up is to sign up to get my emails. Just go to livecreativenow.com, plop your name and email address in there, and subscribe to my Insider's newsletter to make sure you never miss out again. And with that apology, now on with today's episode. Live creative now. I want to talk to you today about perfectionism and about what I have come to call my imperfectionist manifesto. This episode is inspired by a couple of different blog posts that I wrote over the past, several years, which I will link to in the show notes. I want to ask you, do you have a favorite musician or a favorite writer or a favorite artist? Who is somebody, I want you to think of them in your head, somebody whose work really touches you, deeply touches you, whose work moves you, maybe inspires you. Think of that person in your mind. It might be somebody whose work got you through a really tough time, or maybe it compelled you to think in a new way, or maybe it just makes you smile. Maybe it's a piece of art that is hanging on your wall and it just makes you smile when you pass it in your hallway every day. Or maybe it just jazzes you up when you need a little jazzing. So think about that person and how their work has affected you. And then I want to ask you, how would your life be different without their creative contribution? How would your life be different? Imagine that years ago, before you ever discovered this person whose work means so much to you, imagine that they decided that their work wasn't good enough and they kept it hidden so that you never got it. Or worse, imagine that they became totally disgusted with their old work, their previous works, and they suddenly inherited the magical ability to just disappear everything that they had ever created. All the art or the music or writing or whatever it is that they made that touched you would instantaneously, boom, disintegrate. Nobody would ever be able to experience it again. So how does that make you feel? How does that make you feel, that idea of your favorite creator, all of their work just poof, disappearing. Well, a number of years ago, I experienced that feeling. I was at a music camp that I love going to called California Coast Music Camp. It actually doesn't take place on the coast anymore, but it's still called California Coast Music Camp. It's really wonderful. I'll leave a link in the show notes to it. And at the end of the week, just before I drove home, I got into a conversation with one of the teachers at camp that week. And he was an amazing musician. I mean, phenomenally skilled. The man has chops that I will never have. And he also has, as I discovered, a serious perfectionist streak. This guy plays multiple instruments. He's so masterful on all of them, and he makes it all look so effortless. And, you know, it's not that he was born that way. He plays for hours every day and has spent his lifetime, you know, countless hours of really dedicated practice have gone into his technical proficiency and also his incredible ability to express through his music. So during our conversation, I was completely taken aback when he shared a really deep frustration underneath his, what to me seemed like just obvious skill and talent. He said that he just doesn't feel like he connects. He says his playing never matches what he wants to express. Well, I get that, but then he said, and I quote, "I'd really like to recall every single CD I ever produced." Can you imagine? I mean, my heart broke right in that moment. I was astonished. I never would have known because I mean, he's an incredible performer. He has lots of CDs out. And I have to say that I really get what he was saying because, you know, there is always a gap between what you want to produce, the platonic ideal that you have for your creative work, and what you're actually able to create in reality. And that gap is biggest and at its most dramatic when you're brand new at something. You have no chops. You have no skills, and you want to be really good at that thing, and that gap is just gapingly wide, and you know how wide it is. There's a great video, Ira Glass, describing that creative gap that I will link to in the show notes as well. I think it's an excerpt from a This American Life episode, perhaps. In any case, somebody made a video of it, little short 2-minute video, which is awesome. And he talks about how when you're a beginner, you have this really great taste and you know what you like, but your ability to create is nowhere close to what your taste is. And what he doesn't mention, though, is that that gap, I don't think it ever truly goes away, no matter how skilled you get. Because if you are a creative person with taste, by definition, you are always seeking to close that gap. And the truth is, you know, as long as that gap doesn't completely shut us down, which is, of course, the danger, I really believe for myself, at least, that that gap, that's what keeps us driving forward. It's the pursuit of mastery rather than achievement of mastery that makes it interesting. I mean, seriously, if you didn't have something to work on, something to challenge you, wouldn't you get kind of bored? I mean, I know I would. Which goes a long way to explain why I tend to pick pursuits that really are like, you can never completely master them. Calligraphy, jazz, songwriting, Argentine tango, improv, the things that I'm drawn to are things that you can continually improve at over the course of many lifetimes, not just one lifetime. So, I have to confess, and this is something you clearly know about me already if you have listened to any of my other episodes, I'm a recovering perfectionist myself. And my intention, my very, very conscious goal is to be an imperfectionist. I would rather be somebody who takes imperfect action than somebody who sits around waiting for perfection and never does anything, which is how I used to be. So I've discovered a few things, and I've developed what I call my imperfectionist manifesto. I have a poster of it. I'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment. But some of the phrases that ended up in some form on the poster, my imperfectionist manifesto poster, I want to talk about now. Just a few of them. So the first one is, even if you can't stand what you've created, you never know how it might affect somebody else. And that musician that I mentioned earlier is a really good case in point, because I guarantee you that the people who bought his CDs and witnessed his live performances had a really different experience from his work than the musician's, you know, very, very critical judgment of it. I mean, I thought his work was amazing. I had no idea that he was so dissatisfied with his music. In my own life, the thing that always boggles my mind, I mean, it never ceases to surprise me. It shouldn't surprise me anymore, but it still does. It is frequently the work that I feel less than satisfied with that gets the most positive response. I mean, more than once, I have shared a painting on Instagram and Facebook where I've thought to myself, well, that one's going in the trash, or I'm going to, you know, completely paint over it and start fresh, only to have somebody want to buy it. So, you know, when that happens, I kind of have two choices. I could say, well, they're wrong, right? I don't want them to have my thing. I don't want them to see my thing or hear my music or whatever it is, because they're wrong. I'm right. It's crappy. Or I could learn to appreciate other people's taste, right? I might not agree with their taste. I might not ever agree with it, but I can open myself to the possibility that in my opinion about my work is just my opinion. And maybe somebody else's opinion about my work is just as valid as my opinion about my work. I have had enough people respond with delight to stuff that I was planning on trashing to understand that, you know, it's like one person's junk is another person's treasure, right? Something that I think is crap might just change somebody else's life for the better. So even if you can't stand what you've created, even if you think it is utter dreck, utter crap, you never know how it might affect somebody else. It might just change their life. The next point is, ultimate value doesn't always have anything to do with technical skill. Now, if you're a recovering perfectionist like me, you may have a hard time wrapping your head around this one, but it's true. Technique is great. I am always striving to improve my technique at my various different creative pursuits, but technique is not everything. Think about Bob Dylan. Bob Dylan is not a good singer, but he's a phenomenon, right? And what drew people to Bob Dylan wasn't his singing craft. The skill of his vocal technique was not the thing. He didn't need to have amazing vocal technique to be Bob Dylan. And at music camp that week, when I had this conversation with that instructor, there's a student concert at camp every week, and one of the most entertaining acts, most memorable, was a group of guys who were all playing ukulele and singing. None of them was particularly technically skilled, and in fact, one of them had quite literally picked up the ukulele for the very first time that week. So they were not phenomenal musicians. And they, I talked to them afterwards, they felt really sucky about that performance. And in fact, they wished they hadn't gone on stage at all. They were feeling really like, oh, that was such a mistake. But as an audience member, I found it utterly delightful. It was just, it was delightful. It was funny. It was sweet. It was wonderful. They didn't have to be technically skilled in order to create an incredibly entertaining and utterly delightful performance. I also think a lot about a dance performance that I saw when I was, gosh, probably 18, 19 years old. It was a student performance at Stanford University. And there were all different dances. And there were dancers in this performance who were very, very skilled ballerinas who'd clearly been dancing their whole lives and were amazing. They were doing all kinds of acrobatics and quite mind-boggling. But they are not the ones that I remember. In fact, the only reason I remember this performance at all is that there was a man in the show who was technically extremely limited. I mean, he didn't have any extension. He couldn't, you know, he couldn't lift his leg up to his ear or anything like that. He didn't have amazing, he just didn't have technical abilities, really. And really, he didn't do much more than walk, like physically, but he was an incredibly gripping performer. I could not take my eyes off him. The man had the most amazing stage presence. All of the acrobatic ballerinas who were doing amazing things and who were technically off the charts, I don't remember them at all, but I remember this man. So when you start getting down on yourself for not having the chops that you wish you had, remember, I mean, chops are great, keep working on them, but ultimate value doesn't always have anything to do with technical skill. The next point is, and this is relevant to the course that I'm teaching right now, Creative Courage Lab, putting stuff out into the world is really gratifying. And yes, it can be scary as hell, but human beings are social creatures. We are wired to want to connect. And sharing what we create is one way that we do that. Not everyone's going to like what you do, but the response that you get from people who do like it is going to nourish you, and that will make you want to do more. So gratifying. My experience of putting stuff out in the world, including stuff that I thought was crappy, including stuff that is incomplete, in process, whatever, has been profoundly life-changing. Sharing my work on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter, on my blog, and seeing people's responses to it has helped me to it's helped me to take off my own hypercritical glasses and put on somebody else's, like, neutral glasses and see my work the way they see it. Other people see your work for what it is. You see your work for what it isn't. So putting on somebody else's glasses has enabled me to see my work for what it is and to appreciate it more and to find things to like about it when before all I could see was what was wrong with it, where it lacked, right? Putting stuff out into the world is really gratifying. And when somebody tells you that they have been touched in some way by something that you've created, oh my gosh, that's the best. So, moving on to the next point, allowing yourself to be imperfect is a heck of a lot more fun. Being a perfectionist is not a fun way to live. I've lived most of my life as a perfectionist, and it is really stressful. It is not fun. Imperfectionists are just way more relaxed and way more fun to be around. It is a better way to be. So, gosh, I wish I could have embraced imperfectionism earlier in my life, but at least I'm embracing it now. Next point, the more you let yourself be imperfect, the more stuff you'll actually do, and the better you'll get at it, which is so ironic. So ironic. There's this story about a college ceramics class in the book Art and Fear. I love this story. At the beginning of the semester, the teacher decided to do an experiment, and he divided his class into two groups. One side of the classroom would be judged solely on the quality of their pots, and the other side of the group of the classroom would be judged solely on quantity, literally by weight. So if they did 50 pounds of pots, they would get an A. If they made 40 pounds of pots, a B, 30 pounds, a C, etc. Now, it might not be surprising at all to know that group two had a lot more fun than group one, because of course they were not stressed out. They were chatting and laughing as they threw their pots, and they didn't worry if they were crappy because they just would move on to the next one, while poor group one was agonizing, trying to make one perfect pot. But the really interesting thing is which group got the better grades and made the better work. It was the quantity group. It was group two. They cranked out so many pots that they figured out through doing how to make good ones. They learned from their mistakes. And as Ira Glass says in his video about the gap, which again will be linked to in the show notes, the most important possible thing you can do is do a lot of work. So I want you to consider this podcast episode and a personal invitation from me to join me in the ranks of the imperfectionists. I want to create a movement of artists and creatives who are committed to imperfection at all costs. Now, this does not mean being sloppy. This does not mean that you don't care about quality. It means that you're letting go of perfectionism so that you actually do things so that you can get better and create better quality and create more creative work. The only way that we can really be fully creative to access our richest, deepest, most original creativity is to let go of perfectionism. That is the only way. So the funny thing is, after I wrote this post, which I think I originally wrote in 2011, I believe, I had this vision of creating a poster with my imperfectionist manifesto points that I outlined before. And it took me 2.5 years to actually create a poster because guess what? Perfectionism. I had this idea in my head that if I were to create a poster, it would have to be so amazing. We'd have to be not necessarily perfect, but just like mind-bogglingly amazing, right? And that is just so much pressure. I didn't think that I had the ability to do that. So I didn't. Until early 2014, I finally realized, oh my gosh, the only reason I haven't made this poster is because of perfectionism. Something is wrong with this picture. Surely I can make an imperfectionist manifesto poster and practice imperfectionism in the creating of it, which is what I ended up doing. So I will leave a graphic of the poster in the show notes and a link to where you can get a copy of it for yourself if you would like. That is my imperfectionist manifesto. And I tell you, my life has gotten so much better since becoming a practicing imperfectionist. And one last thing that I want to say is that practicing imperfectionism, we get to practice imperfectionism in our practice of imperfectionism because it's not going to be perfect. Because believe me, my perfectionist gremlins rear their ugly heads a lot. And they're very good at disguising themselves as the voice of wisdom, the voice of truth, and the voice of reason. But every so often, I'm able to identify them. I'm getting better. Let's just say that. I'm getting much better at identifying them. And when I identify them, I take the intention to practice imperfectionism to let those perfectionist gremlins go, send them off to get a pedicure, and do exactly the thing that they're telling me not to do. Make your stuff. So that's what I have to say today. That's it. That's a wrap. Thank you so much for joining me today. I hope the idea of imperfectionism is useful to you, and I really hope you will join me in the ranks of the proud imperfectionists. If you are getting value out of this podcast, the best way to thank me is, first of all, to tell your friends, and second of all, leave a 5-star rating and review over on iTunes. Those ratings and reviews make such a big difference in how the show is ranked, and that helps people find the show, and that helps grow the creative uprising. So you can play an important role in this movement simply by leaving an iTunes review. Plus, of course, I would be so incredibly grateful. Thanks again for joining me today. And until next time, go get creating. Mwah!
Live creative now. Live creative now.
Subscribe at livecreativenow.com.